All right, Madam Chair, we are recording and broadcasting. The floor is yours.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Wednesday, March 3rd, 2021 meeting of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. May we have a roll call, please?
Director Jeff Lee. Here. Director Lan George.
Here.
Chair Linda Austin.
Here. Okay, Jeff, will you lead us in the flag salute, please?
I would be happy to if those of you with mute your microphones and follow along with me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Great, thank you very much. That brings us to agenda review. Is there anything on the agenda anyone would like to address or change before we move on? Can we get a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay, the agenda is approved as presented. That will take us now to public comment for items that are not on tonight's agenda.
And Madam Chair, it looks like we have no one in attendance to give public comment.
All right. We'll make note there was no one in attendance for public comment. That brings us to the consent agenda. Item 5A, 5B, and 5C, approval of warrants, the minutes of February 3rd, and the ratification of the contract amendment 3 for the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project with Kennedy Jenks Consultants. So is there any item anyone wants to take off their agenda for further discussion?
Chair Austin, I would just like to pull 5B.
Okay. We'll pull 5B.
I just had a quick question on 5C, just a clarification question.
Okay. So you want to go ahead
okay.
now?
So then it's just for Jeremy, just and for mostly for Jeremy, just as I'm reading it, there's no change as stated in the contract in the document. No change to the amount. It's just more of a change in where the USDA wants us to classify the various tasks of work. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct. At the December 16th board meeting, I was directed to execute that amendment with Kennedy Jenks, and on a parallel path, USDA was reviewing it. And they had precisely one comment, which was that we had both in phase 4 and phase 7 of KJ's contract, there was a work item called project management. USDA took issue with that and said they should only bill that in one category and it should be moved to 4. And it was definitely one of those situations where it was much easier to acquiesce than to continue to have dialogue. And so we said, sure, we can move it from 7 to 4 if that makes our regulatory partner feel better. We went ahead and made that change.
Thank you for the clarification.
Okay. Okay, then we will, let's see, Director George, you want to pull the meeting minutes of February 3rd?
I'm going to abstain from that one. So I just wanted a separate motion for 5B.
Okay, so let's open this to public comment.
Madam Chair, we do not have anybody in public comment.
Okay, thank you. So I'll ask for a motion for 5A and 5C, please.
So moved.
A second.
Okay, so all in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, we all 3-0. Now we will go to 5B, the minutes of February 3rd.
And I'll make a motion that we approve item 5B.
And I'll second that. And then we'll do a roll call, please.
Chair Linda Austin?
Yes.
Director Jeff Lee?
Yes.
Director Lan George?
Abstain.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Now we'll move on to our action items. 6A is the resolution to adopt the utility easement for PG&E on the site. Jeremy, will you have a presentation on?
Yes, let me get to that portion of my package. Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. Before you is a resolution to adopt a utility easement for PG&E on the wastewater treatment plant site. This easement is necessary for the reservice of our electrical power service as part of the redundancy project. We're increasing the size and relocating our transformer on site. And so PG&E needed to redo the power service. Now, the somewhat unique situation here is we're not really redoing the alignment all that much, and it's still within what would have been the easement, but PG&E had no records of a previous easement on the site. So it was relatively late in the process. They asked us to provide an easement for their on their behalf, and their power service has to be in an easement on the property. And so we had Canon, as part of our design effort for the redundancy project, put together the property description and the legal description for this easement. And it's for the benefit of PG&E in maintaining their power service feeding the plant. And with that, that concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions about the easement.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Gent. Does anyone have any questions? I don't see any questions. We'll open it up to public comment.
Madam Chair, we do not have anybody in public comment.
Okay, so I will look for a motion.
I'll make a motion that we adopt Resolution 2020-425, authorizing the district administrator to execute a grant of easement to PG&E in conjunction with construction of the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project.
Okay. I'll second that.
Okay, Director George seconded. Let's do a roll call, please.
Director Lee?
Yes.
Director Lan George?
Yes.
Director Linda Austin?
Yes.
Motion carries.
All right. 6B, contract for the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project administration services with MKN and Associates. Mr. Gent, do you have...
Yes. So good evening. We also have Eileen Shields, who is the project manager for the redundancy project provided by MKN and Associates. But the item before you tonight is a contract for wastewater treatment plant redundancy project administration services with MKN and Associates. And the recommendation is that you authorize the district administrator to execute a contract for continued wastewater treatment plant redundancy project administration services with MKN in the amount of $151,822 for the 2021 calendar year. So a little bit of background, I won't read this verbatim. MKN's been on the project since 2016 in some capacities and since 2019, specifically on these type of contracts. And in 2019, when we first executed, I decided to present this in an annual installment for the contract because project management really does change year over year on developing a major project like this. These type of tasks to supplement staff can vary over year over year, depending on what gets done and what doesn't get done as we move through. So you'll see that we've always tried to account for what we estimated the full amount we would be paying to MKN. So you'll see that kind of referenced in the staff report as well, kind of that $500,000 from taking this from the design phase and managing it all the way through completion of construction. But the next year's allocation is the $151,822. And with that, I'm happy to answer questions, or you can also ask questions of Ms. Shields on the line as well.
All right. Thank you very much. Bring it back to the board. Does anyone have any questions?
This is Director George. I just had a really quick question on the financial breakdown. So when you say the year to date, like 2019 and 2020 was $197,645, is that each year or is that combined for the 2 years?
That's combined for the 2 years total.
Okay, so just this 2021 is going to be a heavy year because it's almost double if you're looking at 2019 and 2020, correct?
Correct. And well, possibly those contracts, those previous contracts were bigger than that, Director George. What you're seeing there is there's several if authorized tasks and stuff that's time and materials. And so those previous contracts, I think, were approximately $130,000 a year, but we did not deplete the full amounts. And so the what was the actual spent or reflected there in that $197,645 in those first 2 years. And so the 151 is our full allocation. We may spend all of that or we may spend less than that during this year. So I guess that's why you're seeing some of that major discrepancy that, you know, before they were around $100,000 a year, if you're trying to interpret that spending, but those contracts were for more than $100,000.
And the same will go for 2022 and 2023, then, I assume?
Correct. And those will be, you know, waning years where we're, you know, reducing some effort on their part too. And so that's all factored into the effort, the magnitude of effort that they have on the project. And that's somewhat illustrated in the cost breakdown that's shown.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I do appreciate the contract being annual and spelling out the scope of work each year. So that's nice. That was my only question. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Anyone up, Jeff?
I had no questions. Director George just asked my question.
Okay, very good. All right, I'll open this for public comment for item 6B.
Madam Chair, we do not have anybody in public comment.
All right, thank you. Then I'll bring it back to the board for a motion or any further
discussion. I'll go ahead and make a motion that we authorize the district administrator to execute a contract for continued wastewater treatment plant redundancy project administrative services with MKN and Associates in the amount of $151,822 for the 2021 calendar year.
It's Director George, I'll second.
Okay, may we have a roll call, please?
Director Jeff Lee?
With appreciation to MKN and Eileen, yes.
Director George?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Motion carries.
All right. Thank you. That'll bring us now to 6C, redundancy project update.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, district administrator. Before you tonight, our first quarterly redundancy wastewater treatment plant update. And so what you'll see is this is somewhat of an outline, and Eileen's going to assist me on this. And what we're going to do is talk about what you'll expect to see. We'll show you some of the monthly reports and the executive summary of what's happened. And as you can imagine, they're still in the phase of submitting written work. So there's not a lot happening, and you'll see that. But to start, I'm going to try something a little new. There's a little video. We flew some drone footage around the facility, and I want to try to play that for the group right now. And so I'm going to share my screen and try to make that happen here. So bear with me.
Hello? Hello?
I am having, I'll get it. I'm having a little bit of trouble. I apologize.
Okay, we're fine.
This actually worked in rehearsal.
Yeah, I showed it to Bob. It went well. When I clicked share screen, Bob, I don't see it anywhere.
You may have closed the file itself.
It's definitely open. I haven't closed it and reopened it, but okay, so it's definitely open now, Bob. And then when I go to share screen,
I see it starting up.
Is my screen sharing right now?
Yeah, you are screen sharing. We're seeing your file. Man, there you are.
Yeah.
Is this it?
Yes, we see it now.
Okay. Just need the volume.
Let's grab that all full. Thank you.
Hello. I'm District Administrator Jeremy Gent, and this is the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District Wastewater Treatment Facility. Constructed in 1966, it has served the communities of Oceano, Grover Beach, and Arroyo Grande for more than a half century. Today begins our 2.5-year long journey to enhance and modernize essential processes at the plant. The community's investment adds redundant treatment processes, improves flood protection, and extends the life of the facility for decades to come. The coming years will be exciting and challenging, and it is the Sanitation District's privilege to deliver this project for our community. This is only the beginning.
Very nice.
Thank you. Yeah, that was fun to do. Yeah.
So will you be doing more?
So we'll try to do that quarterly. Maybe when there's major activities going on, we'll try to we'll be capturing photos and video throughout. But the drone, we have to rent that. So okay. We'll do that occasionally.
All right. Well, thank you for that.
That was very soothing. It was like, just turn off the lights. Good job, Mr. Jen.
Thank you.
Nicely done. You've got a future in books on tape.
Yeah, that's kind of what Bob said.
Explain, he has a good face for radio.
I have a great face for radio. So a few more items. With me tonight is Ms. Shields, and so she's actually put together the bulk of the staff report and this update. And so with that, I'll turn it over to her and let her inform you all of what we've done over the past month since we've issued the notice to proceed and where we're going from there.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Gent. We have a bit of background up front in the staff report. I won't read it as you all have seen it several times, but you understand that this is a major improvements project. The construction documents, as you know, were circulated for bid in September, and we had the bid opening in November of 2020. They were reviewed and evaluated, brought to your board with a recommendation, and JR Phelan's construction company was awarded the contract. The notice to proceed was issued after we got authorization from your board as well as from USDA. It was issued January 25th of 2021. M&S Engineers is serving as the construction manager. Kennedy Jenks continues on board as the design engineer and it's serving an important role in reviewing submittals and RFIs, design questions as they come up, and some site visits inspection as the construction proceeds. And then MKN, myself, is supporting as the district's project manager for the project and coordinating between consultants and overseeing the schedule and the budget in conjunction with M&S. So this second page has a brief schedule summary. There's a lot more detail, but we're trying to give you a snapshot, and we propose to continue at this level of detail throughout construction, coming to your board every quarter with updates on the project or as needed. If there's significant events occurring, we'll keep you informed. The contract duration is 900 days. That's calendar days. At the development of this report, 25 calendar days had elapsed, about 3% of the contract by time. We've had no change orders brought, nothing to consider there at this time for construction contract duration or any weather days at this point either. We have a couple of tables on the budget summary. The first is with regard to the construction contract. The contract award, the bid price was $26,939,042. You know, as we wrote this report, we have not received any progress pay estimate or progress pay request. And there's been no contract changes proposed to date. And so it's showing a 0% completion. The overall project budget, we have, I just have a roll up here, and there's more detail attached that shows the breakdown of the professional services costs and a little bit more on the earn to date and the dollars there to get to this summary table. So that's attached to the staff report. We've spent $0 on construction so far. At least we haven't, you know, the district hasn't seen those costs yet. So we're showing the bid price plus a construction contingency. This is a recommended contingency that's based on looking at both what we consider to be higher risk items, the more unknowns, and, you know, doing an estimate there with the design engineer on what percent of the contract would be higher risk, you know, some of the underground work and such, and what is kind of normal. So we did a bit of a hybrid contingency in that sense, where the higher risk items, we recommended it at 15% contingency, and what we would consider kind of more normal or lower risk items were 10%. So probably more detail than you want, but it's about a 12.5% contingency is what we are budgeting for on the project. And we'll do our best to keep that tight, not dig into that, but we wanted the district to go into this project with a reasonable budget. So total cost, construction cost plus contingency is about $30.3 million. Professional services costs are budgeted at 6.7, more or less, $6,740,493. Spent to date is a little over $2.5 million. It's largely the design, as you know, there's also some MKNs, administrative costs, some environmental costs, some of these other professional services costs that are detailed out in the attached table. So our balance to finish is just under $4.2 million. As we were developing the budget for the loans that the district received for this project, we added in a professional services contingency. And I believe that's at about 10% of the professional services costs that are not, that had not been spent at that time. So that's a little over $361,000. So overall project budget, and it's rounded to the nearest 100,000, is 37.4 million. Spent to date, $2,549,164, leaving 34,845,445. So moving on to the summary of work, as you can imagine, we have not dug into, no pun intended, we haven't dug into the major construction yet. It's been primarily pre-work submittals, which include, I think I get into that a little bit here. Yeah, so like the stormwater pollution control plan, the work sequencing plan, some of the site logistics, traffic control plan, how are we going to get temporary utilities to the construction trailers, these kinds of things that the contractor needs to provide in a written proposal or submittal, and then the design team, the construction manager, I review, district staff reviews as well, and we provide responses. All of those construction documents are being kept in EADOC, which is a document control system that allows us to pop in there and see the status of these submittals or any of the construction documents when we need to. And it also provides, you know, one spot for that dialogue between the consultants, which is really helpful for these sides of projects. And M&S is maintaining that system as the construction manager. They've mobilized construction trailers to the site. If you looked closely, you might have seen them in the drone video. Let's see, I wrote on here, you know, the district's retained RINCON for the biological monitoring services. So they've been out on site to do some of the pre-construction surveys that are required for the environmental documentation and the permit with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Pacific Resources Services was retained for the Community Workforce Agreement Administration. So they conducted the pre-job meeting where they met with the contractor and the trades representatives to talk about work allocation and which union groups were claiming which pieces of work and get through those items. We've had a few requests for information from the contractor that Kennedy Jenks and M&S are working through. And let's see, I think I hit all the other ones. Anticipated upcoming work over the next couple of months, we're gonna continue to get through those major submittal items that are required. Some of the bigger ones are, you know, some of the shoring plans, excavation plans, the dewatering plans, and these other large pieces of planning that they need to do before they really dig in. They'll install the temporary power and water to the trailers. That's hopefully starting next week. They're starting to clear and grade the contractor laydown area that's on the western side of the site, where they'll have some parking and some material laydown. They're going to set up some of the settlement monitoring control points, so watching to make sure as they do some of this heavy groundwork that they're not causing settlement on site. Responsible for monitoring that was survey. They'll start the concrete demo, do some potholing, remove grass, and do initial grading. And then there's going to be continued coordination with PG&E and AT&T for relocating some of the utilities that are going to be disrupted by the project. Finally, on the fiscal considerations, as you know, we've been budgeting and did a in-depth financial plan for this project from before we awarded the contract, and they were updated after we did receive the bids. We got in there and reworked the budget, made sure we had a good plan moving forward. Successfully sold the certificates of participation at a favorable rate, and we have the excuse me, I'm blanking for a moment here. The, the Jeremy, help me out if you know what I'm talking about. The commitment from USDA, I don't want to speak to it incorrectly. The commitment from USDA for the low interest loan, that we've met all the, is this intention, letter of intent?
Yeah, we met, the letter of intent. So we were first given a letter of conditions and then,
yes.
Then a letter of intent that basically pledges the USDA money for reimbursement upon completion of the project. So it's a, we have interim financing right now. So we sold two series of bonds or certificates of participation. So there's a Series A and then a Series B, and the Series B is the USDA interim financing. And so within 5 years, we have to pay that back. And that'll be paid back by the long-term low interest USDA funding. That's a 40 year at 1.375% interest.
Right. So the nuance there is there's continued requirements from USDA to, in order to receive those funds, which they want to see the construction completed as intended. And the big thing that they're concerned about there is meeting the requirements of the U.S. American Iron and Steel, which is spelled out in our construction documents. So they'll want to verify that and stop by the project a couple times to check in and before they sign the check, essentially, and send the money over and buy out the COP. Thank you. So I've attached to the staff report the monthly report executive summary from M&S. So the construction manager prepares these monthly reports. They're quite lengthy and detailed. So I've attached the executive summary, which I drew some of the information into the staff report. And the next quarterly report will likely have 3 or 4 of these monthly summaries from M&S attached to them. And then there's a more detailed project budget status table that's also attached. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there anyone have any questions? Okay, Director.
Madam Chair, I just had one question, and it might actually be for Jeremy rather than Eileen. But thank you, Eileen, for that report. So the question I have is, since the plant is technically a closed location due to COVID, so what protocols does the contractor have in place to make sure that they don't bring COVID-19 on site and potentially impact our staff members?
So that is a work in process. That's something we've asked the construction manager, M&S, to coordinate the unique situation of the pandemic. I'm happy to report that all of the operators at the plant have been afforded the opportunity to be vaccinated, and all of them have chosen to participate. So we've got some security from the plant side to make sure that the plant continues to run. So that's certainly lets me sleep better at night knowing that we have that. But yes, there are safety protocols. We did have to modify even our award, when the contractors come in to sit down the award, we had to have a modified system for that. We've been doing virtual weekly meetings with them through Zoom to not have interaction. We've implemented masks indoors everywhere on site as mandatory. And so that's all being adhered to. But in addition to that, M&S is working on some details on with Phelons on what their protocols are for a safe work environment.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I don't see anybody else. So we open this up for public comment.
Madam Chair, we're not seeing anyone in public comment.
All right, thank you. So this is just a receive and file, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you very much, Eileen and Jeremy. We'll move on now to, I've lost my agenda here. Move on to 6D, the status update on the placing the 2021-22 rates and charges on the tax roll.
Yeah, so good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator. So tonight I have a status update on placing the 2021-2022 district rates and charges on the county tax roll. And we have Adina McCargo, who is Vice President. I don't know your title, Adina, but at NBS, who's our consultant that handles our billing for the community of Oceano. And so what we're looking to do is mimic the same process we have in Oceano in the other two communities. And so Adina's going to has a presentation tonight, and we'll be prepared to answer questions on how that gets implemented, the rules that we have to follow, how the public notification takes place and things like that. So with that, I'll turn it over to Adina. And are you prepared to share your PowerPoint or
Yeah, I'm ready to do that if that's
okay. Because I had it ready too, but go ahead. Okay. You can run it, Adina.
Sure. Okay. Well, good evening, everyone. I'm Adina McCargo. I'm a director here at NBS, and I did help the sewer district with the project that put the charges on the roll for the Oceano community back in 2016. So, just a quick kind of overview here on what we'll talk about tonight is just a real quick, it looks like a long presentation, but they're real quick slides here. So we'll go through a little bit of the background, authorization, timeline, et cetera. So in 2016, we put the Oceano Community Service District service area on the tax rolls for the sanitation district. And then now we'd like to add the cities of Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach to the tax rolls as well. And so there's a couple of things that we have to do to get that to happen. The health and safety code allows us to collect those sewer charges on the county roll, and it requires a property owner ratepayer notice that goes out. So we're converting from the customers being billed to the property owners being billed. And so we just have to mail a notification to all of them and offer an opportunity for them to come and voice any concerns they may have with that on the billing. Annually, it's not required to do the written notice and the big process. It's just a notice, but it still does go to a board meeting each year. The report would include the charges for that year, and it would be noticed, and property owners would, again, still have an opportunity to be heard if they needed to. So the key timeline is going to follow the same process that we go through this year for the regular placement of the Oceano CSD. We're just going to add a couple steps to it to if we continue to go forward with the two cities. So the mailing of notice is a key task for the initial year requirement only. We'll publish the notice in the newspaper for the public hearing for both, and then hold the public hearing with both reports, and then submit the charges to the county. A more detailed timeline is here, and it kind of goes over the two different dates for publishing in the paper, along with when we would actually mail the district notices out, and the public hearing would be on June 2nd. San Luis Obispo County has an early submittal for most of us. We're used to August 10th for probably about, 60%, 70% of the counties in California. So we have to do it in July for San Luis Obispo County. So we'd get everything into them by their deadline. And then doing this way has some benefits. including that you get a consistent receipt of revenues with billing. Obviously there's going to be delinquencies and collection efforts and things like that. With county tax bills in San Luis Obispo County, they are on what is called the teeter plan, meaning all of the revenues get sent to the local agencies, regardless of whether the property owners have paid their tax bill. So as long as the county continues that teeter plan, the district will get 100% of the collections and doesn't need to be concerned with potential property owner delinquencies. So that's it for the presentation. Are there any questions?
All right, thank you very much. Are there any questions for Adina? I don't see my other board members. There we are. I see Ms.
And I do have a couple. I do have a couple questions if I could.
Go ahead.
So, and it may be for Adina, and it may be a little bit for you, Linda, as well. So, one of the concerns I've always expressed is as the charges go to the property owners, Grover Beach is somewhere between 55 and 60% rental properties. And so then the property owners are then going to have an opportunity to include the sewer bill on their monthly rent. And so where do you see, or how do you safeguard against property owners charging more than the actual cost of the sewer bill as an increase to the renter?
Yeah, from a statutory perspective, there isn't really anything that you would do within these health and safety code statutes, but your attorney, your city attorney or the district attorney might have more information on what you're allowed to do if you have things like rent control, even as an option. But yeah, I don't know that there's a real safeguard that's in the code itself for these particular actions.
So I guess the question then becomes, have you heard of other jurisdictions having concerns of that? And maybe this becomes a question for, just an ancillary question for Linda to see if there's been any concerns in Oceano with property owner / renter determinations.
Sure. Well, because, I manage rentals. So what happened was, like, the water bills would have a separate amount for the sewer. So most of our tenants were paying the water bill, and we just, at the amount that went to the tax roll, they knew what it was on their water bill, and I think we added it all up for the year, and then each tenant would just pay that amount extra to their rent. And so they only paid, it wasn't like a rental increase. What we've been doing is just when the property taxes are twice a year, they pay extra for that sewer. And then some of the owners just paid it and didn't charge anything, just absorbed the extra amount. So
yeah,
that's a bit of Oceano. I haven't heard. First, it was pretty rough in the beginning, getting everybody used to it and, on board. But I think it's working out just fine now.
Yeah, we do have our number on the tax bills to handle property owner phone calls. And I haven't had any complaints or concerns from that perspective. Since 2016, there were maybe questions of timing when we did it. When we did it with Oceano, we did a little bit of a different practice because the district was having to do the billing itself at that point in time. And so we did include delinquencies. If we do it this time, it'll just be current year, and the existing water bill charges will just continue to be collected if they're delinquent during that time. So it should be smoother this time around for that part of the process, with no refunds of overpayment because someone paid the district and the tax bill. So it should be a nice, clean, smooth transition this time to go just from one method of billing to the other.
Okay. Then my second or third and last question for you is, as either renters or properties change hands, And right now, obviously, occupancy rates are really high. But if we were in a situation where occupancies were lower or there was a lot of turnover, this provides financial certainty for the district, correct? But in that case, the property owners or the renters, if it was a vacant situation, they'd still pay the sewer bill, even if there wasn't an occupant in the structure. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct. So the bill would go out with their regular property tax bill. And so any kind of changing hands in terms of ownership would occur in the same way that it does with the regular property taxes, where they, you know, split it or take care of it during close of escrow. And so from the perspective of consistent district revenues, yeah, it does make it a much more consistent amount and process.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else have any comments?
Yes, Madam Chair, this is Director George. I just had a comment, a question actually, and I don't know if it's because I'm not a regular at these meetings, but when I'm reading the background, it says at the board meeting in July, the board directed staff to engage the two remaining member agencies. So can we talk a little bit about what that engagement looked like and what did our cities, you know, respond to you with? Because I would think if you were engaging our cities, I know for AG, that would be something that the city manager would at least notify or talk to the council about to see what we think would be best for our citizens. And so I guess I'm just curious as to what that engagement looked like.
So it was with the city managers, mm-hmm. Dating back to both Jim Bergman and now Whitney McDonald. And the most recent was maybe a month ago with Whitney, Bill Robeson, Shane Taylor, and I want to say his name's Mike. There's a finance guy, but
Mike Stevens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was the four of them, and we talked it through. They had, you know, some concerns about currently AG suspends bills for people that go out of town for 3 months. And so they mentioned that that was one of the concerns that they brought up. But then they actually, when they realized that that didn't actually apply to the district's charges, that relief that they provide for people that move out of their houses, they were no longer concerned about that. And so back in 2018, I met with Jim Bergman and it was your finance director at the time. She left Essenwine.
Shannon.
Yeah, Shannon. And we sat down and there were some discrepancies and there was issues with collections. And so that was one of the issues that this would resolve for the district. Like there were collection issues on the district's charges that AG wasn't able to collect on. And so there was some lost revenue because of that. And this will protect the district from having that occur in the future. And so that's, everybody was in agreement that would be a good move for the district. And also there's the general cost savings were outlined with the city managers. Currently, we pay the city of Grover Beach and the city of Arroyo Grande approximately $22,000 a year to do the billing on our behalf. And NBS has submitted a proposal to do all three communities. I want to say that's around 17. I think it's in my staff report, but it's around $17,000 total for all three communities billing. So right now we pay about $10,000 to NBS for Oceano, $22,000 to Grover, $22,000 to AG for a total of about $54,000 a year in billing. And that's going to drop to around $17,000 with this process. So that's a direct savings. And so these were the conversations we had with the cities and, you know, why we're choosing to collect our rates this way, because it's more cost effective and more reliable. And so it was more of a information. Let us know if you have concerns. We want to get them vetted. And without concerns, we move forward. Now, why you didn't see it at the council, you would have to talk to them a little bit. But it may be because there wasn't explicit authority at the council to change anything, and maybe they didn't want to present it that way. Because the district being a separate government body, it's not really a committee assignment in the traditional sense. It's a separate agency, and maybe Keith could elaborate that those decisions are somewhat independent of what the city's decision is going to be. So it's really our board's decision. But we definitely want to engage the community, and if there's concerns or we'd cause problems for our partner agencies, we would want to get that vetted and cleared up and make sure that we don't cause any grief for anybody.
So are you saying that the conversations that the most recent one that you had with that team, you know, Bill, Whitney, Shane, Mike, they didn't raise any concerns that were alarming to you? Because obviously I understand the district is a separate entity, but at the end of the day, if the residents get upset because now they're seeing this, you know, sewer bill on their property taxes, and I know we're going to do noticing, but the public doesn't ever see any noticing, and we always just hear the backlash of it. And so I just want to make sure that my city management, my administrative team has had that conversation with you guys in a manner that really vets this whole process, so that when it does come to fruition, we can do what we need to do to appease our residents when they are up in arms.
Sure. And so there are ratepayers as well. And so, yeah, we want to, you know, keep the peace with them and do this correctly. You know, I would certainly be happy to sit in on an AG or Grover City Council meeting and, you know, talk about why the district's making this change and do an information session on why we're doing that. That is that has been offered maybe a year and a half ago when we first started talking about this, that we would, you know, possibly present. So yeah, I'll follow up with Whitney and see if she wants to pursue something like that.
Thank you. I would really appreciate that. We try really hard to engage the public as much as we can and have that transparency. And you know, like tonight, there's no one on the call on this meeting. And so really, no one's going to really know about it. And so as much exposure as we can offer to our public, I'd really like to. So I appreciate you offering that. Thank you. That was my only question.
Okay.
And maybe if I could, Madam Chair. So just to let Director George know that one of the things that I did was in my report out from the Sand District, I did let our council know, and our city manager and leadership team did know that we were going to be having this conversation. And if there was anyone from the council level or the public that wanted to participate in that, or if we wanted to have it agendized, that we could do that as well. And the response that I got, which may be different in Rio Grande, but the response that I got was, we trust what you guys are doing over at the Sand District. If it's in the best interest of the Sand District, the public, and the community, then go ahead and move forward. But if either a joint session or an individual session was offered to AG and Grover, I'm sure some folks would take us up on it.
I appreciate that. You know, we adopted the 3CE electric choice, and we probably had them come to our council four times and give presentations and answer questions and PowerPoints. And still now, everyone's like, oh my gosh, what is this? I don't understand what's going on with my electric bill. And so no matter how much we get out there, people still don't know. And so if I can at least say, hey, I'm sorry, you don't know, we had four public meetings on it, then it at least we've done our part. And so I feel like something like this, being as I'm not a regular director, I would see this as a really good opportunity for Mr. Dent to come on to the city council and just give us a brief you know, a brief description of what's going on. And I think that would be really helpful because then we can then share that with our public.
I agree. I think because when we did it in Oceano, we really needed to get the output to the public because there were a lot of questions and confusion, and it's all smoothed over now. But in the beginning, just the public awareness is really important on it. Let them know. So I think that's a great idea for you guys to do that.
Change is frightening.
Okay. Is public comment? Is there any public comment on this item?
And Madam Chair, I don't see anybody in the queue.
Okay. Then I think we're good to move on to the District Administrator and Plant Operations Report.
Madam Chair, I'll go ahead and take the lead. Jeremy, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, I just wanted to say thanks to Adina and let her off the line. I think she
is. Yes. Thank you very much, Adina.
My pleasure. Thank you. I'll have a great evening.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Go ahead, Michael.
Okay, just give me a second to share my screen. Let's see. Okay. Can you guys see that? How does that look?
Got it.
Is it the full?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board. Michael Jones, Plant Superintendent, presenting the Plant Operations Report for the reporting period of February 1st through February 24th. During this reporting period, the district's facility met its permit limitations as required under the State of California's National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System. All of our analysis was within permit limitations. In the table below, you'll see that monthly plant data for February is well within permit limitations. Again, our plant continues to operate well. We got the redundancy project going on, of course, but we're still able to maintain proper operation of our treatment plant and meet all of our permit limitations. Some operation and maintenance tasks that staff completed are as follows. We troubleshot our influent pump number 3, cleaned probes on our well water system, installed a new diaphragm on Amiod filter systems, repaired the valve on chemical level sight gauges, installed flush valve on Amiod filter system, checked and marked underground service alerts, troubleshot small portable generator, cleaned and prepared our old loader for surplus sales, organized and cleaned scrap metal area, placed a base and holes on back entry road, rinsed out old polymer totes, we replaced the vent on our safety trailer, repaired chemical building doors, adjusted back entry gate. Moving on, some work orders that staff completed are as follows. Inspected the digester number 1 vacuum pressure relief valves, some preventative maintenance on our forklift and our 6-inch whacker trash pump. We rinsed down all surfaces of all of our clarifiers. We test ran our emergency generator and emergency bypass pump. Deragged both primary sludge pumps, checked our calibration of our backup chemical systems. We replaced heating and air conditioning unit filter, changed oil and inspected orifices on fixed film reactor, and then inspected all clarifier drives and participated in a quarterly safety meeting. Some training that staff participated in was on target solutions training on respiratory protection and hard hats. And during this reporting period, there were no callouts. Just a couple of updates. The district has started flushing and the CCTV or closed circuit television continued its efforts of flushing and closed circuit television of its trunk sewer main, in Grover Beach. And following the completion of our trunk main in Grover Beach, we're going to move over to Oceano and complete the remainder of our trunk main. Another project that's going on right now was our rehabilitation, our digester number 2 rehabilitation project. We were planning on having a second meeting in March this month on the 17th, but that we decided against that. There were some unforeseen issues in the lining on the interior coating. On the interior coating of the digester. There was some catastrophic failures on the lining itself. And basically what happened is typically that tank's full with liquid, and it allows for less of a temperature change. And what happens is the metal, when it's empty, it allows for the temperature to change more drastically. So what happens is when it's warm, the metal kind of relaxes, and then when it gets cold, it gets harder. And there was a failure in the coating of the interior of the digester. And what we're going to do is we're going to have an inspector come out and take a look at the coating to see if it was either the coating or if it was the preparation of the metal before the coating was applied. And then, so due to this failure, it could extend the project, the duration of the project. So we want to confirm that. And of course, we don't want to make the same mistake again. So we want to make sure that we apply the correct coating. So that's, we're deciding against having the second meeting in March, until we figure that out. And with that, that concludes my report, and I will pass it over to District Administrator Jeremy Gent. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Mr. Gent?
Yeah, good evening. Jeremy Gent, District Administrator, and I'll elaborate a little bit on what Michael said here in a second. Updates, redundancy update I normally give here, but we had the formal update tonight as item 6C. Central Coast Blue, their test injection well has been drilled and is pumping, doing test pumping of water that commenced 3 a.m. Monday morning. And so they've been discharging to the Pismo outfall through our facility and then out to the ocean with their test injection well. And what this well is, the district's not directly involved in this part of the project, but it's the one of the seawater intrusion barrier wells, one of six that will be placed along the coast. And so this is a pilot portion that's meant to test how the ground's going to respond to both taking and extracting water. And so they're studying that right now to further develop the other six wells. And so that's right at the end of Pier Avenue. If you have people ask you what's going on there, there's the massive wall around there with the noise wall. They're working on getting some signs up. They should have been up last week, but I didn't see them. But I think they should be forthcoming. The project's working on that, so that people know what's going on, because it is a little bit of a mystery as you go by. The three miscellaneous items, as Michael alluded to, scrap all that. I was coordinating there that holding the second meeting in March. And we did have, what I wanted to talk about on Michael. So we have our digester number two project that we cleaned out right now. And so it's the existing 10-year-old coating inside the, it's not a new coating as part of the project that failed. Yeah. When we thought we were only going to have to do spot repairs to the paint inside the lining inside, where there were some small failures, but now over the course of a month, the failures have increased in number pretty dramatically. And so instead of spot repairs, we had to change the contract to do a full repainting of the inside of the tank. And so we were actively advertising that project. And so we had to extend the deadline and change the plans, because we literally determined this morning or yesterday morning, I'm sorry. And so that's where we're at with that. And so we are budgeted. We did anticipate that we would have to reline the whole inside when we budgeted at the beginning of the fiscal. So there is adequate budget to complete the internal coating. But when we first drained it, we were pretty optimistic. And even the inspector said that, yeah, we could only do spot repairs and it would be fine. But it's probably turned out for the best case that we saw this paint failure complete itself before we put it back into operation, because we wouldn't open it up for a decade. So I just wanted to elaborate a little bit on that. Plant tours, they're all suspended due to COVID. And then I want to point out there's a typo on these tentative items. Those should all be April 7th, which is the next meeting in April. And so we will be having a meeting in April as scheduled and anticipated. And with that, it concludes my administrator's report, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions? for Mr. Jent? I don't see any questions. So thank you, Michael and Jeremy, for the reports. Do we have any public comment on the district administrator and plant operator's report?
No, ma'am. We have no one in public comment.
All right. Thank you very much. That will take us now to any board member communications?
Nothing for me tonight.
Okay. Can I just want to ask Bob, before we started, you were talking about a new assembly bill about having the Zoom meetings.
Yes, ma'am.
It was going to be that they would all be Zoom meetings, or that we won't?
No, back? No, that there would be a segment of a public meeting that could or allow for a Zoom process, so that people could remote in rather than join a meeting in public. Okay. It is a modification to the Brown Act and the Bagley-Keene Act, and it's Assembly Bill 339, I believe. And we've been asked questions about the process that we do for our Zoom process now and what we've done in the past. And so that's what's going on.
Okay. I just didn't. Do we know any when our meetings will go back to normal? Do we have any idea on any dates on that yet?
Well, it's all depending on where we are within the process of what level of COVID infection processes that we are. We have just gone to the red scale at this point, and it most likely will be, you know, as things improve with vaccines, we feel that we're preparing for May to June to July for board meetings to start getting back into a normal process of meeting into a facility. But we are calculating that there will probably still be an element of caution. And so we're designing a system that can allow for a Zoom participation.
Great. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Well, is there anything else?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Just a quick follow-up on that, Madam Chair. So, I mean, I guess from the district standpoint, I guess that would be probably Jeremy in consultation with the board when we choose to come back. Correct, if I'm correct, and obviously we can, depending upon when the governor either extends or continues to have his order in place, Bob and the AGP team would be key to making sure that we satisfy our recording requirements. But I guess it would be probably at Jeremy's recommendation when we would come back, correct?
Is that correct, Jeremy?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been tracking it and would anticipate having a dialogue, once we reach the orange tier, and would anticipate in a yellow tier based on some of those rules, as I've read, on spacing and stuff like that, that really at the yellow tier, I think you could look at reopening these meetings. And so we could follow, that kind of formal guidance and, be safe and be able to point to something on how we're making this decision.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, with that, if there's nothing else, I would move that we adjourn.
I would second that.
Okay. All right. Well, good night. Thank you, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Keith. You didn't have to say anything.
those are the best kind of meetings.
Okay. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Thanks, Bob.